One man who has made the journey from India. There's a large press contingent that will come. He has followed Test cricket around the world, Anand Vasu. Welcome to 1116 SEN, Anand.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be in Adelaide.
You've just arrived yesterday, so just in the nick of time.
A bit of a trek, but made it in one piece, and I think that's all that counts.
Tell us where you've been around the world following Indian cricket.
Well, it's been about 20 years now, yep. So unfortunately haven't made it to Zimbabwe, but have been to every other test-playing country, been to a few World Cups and Champions Trophies and T20s and plenty of test series. It would be good to watch an Indian test series win in Australia as well.
Serving notice right at the start. How often have you been to Australia?
This is my fourth trip here.
Yep. And so have you been here for test series and for a World Cup? Did you come for the World Cup?
I did.
Yep. What are the challenges that India have faced here when you've been covering them, do you think?
Well, I think in the early years, say 15 or 20 years back, it was more a question of being intimidated when they got here. I think before the first ball was bowled, the Indian team was already a bit on the back foot, because you talk about different conditions, bounce in Brisbane or Perth, a bit of turn and good batting conditions in Adelaide, turn in Sydney again, the weather in Melbourne. So there was a bit of a fear factor, a bit of diffidence, for want of a better word. And India started badly on most of those tours. And when you start badly in Australia, it's very hard to get back into a series.
So what makes this different?
For starters, this team carries almost no baggage. And this is a new generation of Indians, not just Indian cricketers. They tend to think a bit differently, think far more confidently. Sometimes a bit the confidence can spill over into overconfidence and can be a little misplaced, but by and large, they certainly won't be guessing. They won't leave here wondering. They'll leave it all out on the park. If they're good enough, consistently enough, there's no reason why they can't beat most teams in the world at the moment.
So when you talk about a more confident India, and this is society and cricket, give us an insight into the relationship between the cricket team and the development of the country?
Well, the two have run parallel in many ways. India opened up much more as a country over the last two or three decades. The economy has gotten stronger. The sport has got much bigger backing from corporates. The BCCI itself has grown into a much more powerful organization. So it's able to bargain more effectively at the world table, if you will. And each of these things feeds off the other. So when you have a society that's developing fast, when there's a strong growth rate, when economic conditions are getting better, the sport also grows. There's more money that goes into the infrastructure, marketing, logistics, all of it. And India was a place which other players from other countries never wanted to visit. It was probably second only to Pakistan, places that people did not want to go to. But now with the Indian Premier League and with other major events happening there, India is attracting talent from the best talent from around the world. The dollars obviously help. So India has become a kind of go-to destination for cricket. And so the players subconsciously, I think, take that confidence out to the middle when they go out there.
How significant is Virat Kohli in all of that?
Well, this team is very clearly Virat Kohli's team. You might have a vice-captain and a coach and 10 other guys who have to do their roles, but this team is fashioned around the personality of Virat Kohli, and he's always been one of those outgoing, aggressive, slightly in-your-face kind of personalities, not just cricketers. His batting is certainly like that. He likes to get the runs on the board, get going quickly and put the pressure back on the opposition. But even off the field, his personality is very much like that. And so I think some of the younger players who've grown up looking up to him have seen his success on the field, off the field. He's done very well for himself financially. He's married to a beautiful film actress. A lot of young men aspire to many of those things, and so naturally they also play their cricket in a similar fashion.
Does he wield his power responsibly?
Do you know of anyone who wields power responsibly? Well, he's still a young man in terms of captaincy. he might have been playing cricket for a few years now, and he might have a lot of runs and miles under the belt. But as a leader, I think he's still growing. I think while he's been very effective at constantly improving his own game, it's not been quite as easy to carry some of the others with him, which is a significant part of any leader's role. I think he will get better at that. And I think he would also benefit from having a set of diverse opinions around him. When you have a lot of people agreeing with everything you say, you don't grow as fast as you perhaps could otherwise.
Where can he get those dissenting voices?
Well, his teammates to start with, and I think the coaching staff have a major role to play here as well. Someone like Ravi Shastri has been in the game forever and a day in various different capacities. He certainly has the stature and he has the ear of the captain as well. So if he chooses to, he can certainly put across a completely different point of view to what Virat Kohli holds.
And how. So it struck me watching Kohli play in India, he is such a magnetic figure. Every spectator is drawn to him, the team is drawn to him, the game seems to revolve around him. In the cricket that you've watched at all sorts of different levels, at all sorts of different venues, is he the centerpiece?
Very much so, and especially if you watch him on television, if you watch the broadcast, there might be 35, 40 cameras at the ground, but there seem to be two or three that are following him permanently because they don't miss anything that he does. Even in between deliveries, he's very animated, which makes for great viewing. So this he does bring a certain energy onto the ground, and I think the other players look up to him for the cues because when Virat Kohli is looking happy and upbeat and strong, it means the Indian team's doing well. When there's a partnership building and the bowlers are flagging a little bit, pitch's gone a little flat, ball's gone soft, and you can see shoulders drooping. And Kohli often gets the crowd going at that time. He might be at slip, he might be at point, but he will make it a point to turn around towards the spectators and have them cheer as the bowler comes in, which gets the spectators back into the game, but it also reminds the players on the field that he's the boss.
Anand Vasu is in Australia to cover the series from India. Anand, were you in England for the Test series?
Not this time around, but I have been previously.
What did you observe from that Test series as to, so it was 4-1. It felt like an unfair. It wasn't that lopsided, and it felt like India had made good ground on foreign soil.
Each individual game was certainly much closer than the collective scoreline finally showed. But I think India made some strategic and tactical errors that cost them quite a bit. In the sense that with Alastair Cook not making runs to the last Test match, the middle order being unsettled, Ben Stokes going away to address a court case in the middle of the series, no settled spinner in place of the England team, you would have thought that this was India's best chance to do something special. And in many ways it was, but it's just those passages of play, those big moments when they came along, apart from Kohli, nobody else seemed to be in the right frame of mind to grab those opportunities. And England eventually just came through on home soil. They knew exactly what to do at which occasion. And it sounds like an excuse, but it's not, in that India didn't have the rub of the green when it came to the tosses as well, which can be especially crucial in England because you could start off overcast conditions, ball swinging around, and suddenly you're 50 for 5, and then when the opposition comes in to bat, it's bright and sunny and the pitch flattened out, and they're able to quite comfortably make 450, and then you're chasing the game from there on. And that did happen to India on occasion during the series.
So is. For the series that haven't been won overseas, and this is the hardest thing to do in cricket as it is right now to win a Test series overseas, is why would you feel like this team can make the breakthrough in Australia right now?
To start with, this is possibly the most consistent fast bowling attack that India has brought to Australia in a long, long time. And by fast, I mean actually fast rather than non-spin bowling. Because we've come here before with bowlers who are very skillful in terms of swinging it, seaming it, and all of that. But to be able to bowl at 140 kilometers an hour or close to that through the whole day, to have three bowlers you can pick from who can do that on a consistent basis is a luxury India hasn't had in the past. And India are really missing their all-rounder Hardik Pandya in this series, because while he's not 140, he can push it, and he can bowl, he can give you 10, 15 overs and maybe 2 wickets, which does a lot to balance the playing 11. With him not being here, I think the trickiest thing in selection before this game will be, do you play 3 seamers and 1 spinner, or do you play 2 and 2? Each of those is risky in its own way.
What do you think they'll do?
I think being the first test, they probably won't want to go in with only 2 seamers, because if one breaks down, then you're stuck. You're completely stuck. And while I've been told that this pitch is a little spicier than usual, and there might be a bit more moisture than we usually expect at the Adelaide Oval, we'll have to see what happens come match day, because it's been warm and sunny and some of it might just burn off. And then you get a good batting deck. You don't want to be stuck with one fast bowler short then.
What will the interest in India be like for this test series?
It's already massive. It's a good thing in the way that there have been already games before the first test match has come around. Even if it's a different format, it gives a chance for viewers to get a look at some of the players from both sides who will feature in these games as well. And it's been a bumper overseas season for India. So
yes.
This sort of brings an end to a passage of play in which India has had opportunities abroad. In that sense, while we don't have properly demarcated seasons anymore, the end of this Australia tour will mark the end of a big test chunk for India, and then you move on to the IPL and World Cup year and all of that. So in that sense, the anticipation and excitement is very high. And you know, growing up, one of the great things to do as a kid was to wake up at 5:30, 6 in the morning because of the time difference and watch cricket in Australia. The skies seem to be bluer than anywhere else. The grass is always green. There's a good crowd in. Commentators are excitable. There's plenty of action on the field. So it's something that is a tradition for most people who have followed cricket. It would have been on the radio in the early years, but later on television, certainly. You always knew when there was cricket happening in Australia. When India came to Australia, it was never quiet.
And is the place of Test cricket in India, so we've seen the IPL and how that has grown. We see the crowds there and the lack of crowds at Test matches, comparatively speaking. And this is a debate the world over. In India right now, where's the balance of Test cricket versus the shorter forms?
Well, there are certain venues in India which have been traditionally associated with Test cricket, and the support in those cities continues to be quite strong. If you go to Bangalore, or if you go to Chennai and some other cities, while the grounds are never going to be full because they're built for 50,000 capacity, and you're only going to get those numbers in limited overs cricket, you're rarely, if ever, going to fill a stadium like that in a Test match in India. The stands tend to look a little more empty than they actually are. You could get 20,000 in and the stadium looks like it's half empty, which in fact it is. And there's an analogy that I often use when I'm asked about attendances in Test cricket. I personally am a great fan of music. I listen to some form of music almost every day, but I haven't been to a concert in years. There's many ways in which the game is consumed. And Test cricket, you're driving to work, you're listening to it on the radio, you're following it online on your phone, you're watching it on television. You may not have the luxury of taking 5 days off and actually getting out to the Oval. That doesn't mean the game isn't being followed.
Yep.
It's Test cricket, trust me, while it's at risk, certainly in India, it's also details of its death are largely exaggerated.
And it's great to meet you. We'll follow you throughout the series. Keep an eye on your work, as I know you're going to join me on Cricket 360 from time to time, and we'll have you back in this radio box as well.
Thanks for having me.
Anand Vasu, who is covering this test series, as he has many others out from India.